Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Behind the Binge podcast. Today, we're talking about kids. A lot of people who are in the intuitive eating space or who are new to intuitive eating eventually turn their eyes to kids and go, okay, well, how can we actually raise kids to be intuitive eaters? Because a lot of people find intuitive eating, stumble into intuitive eating after a period of dieting, right? They've been through the ringer with diet culture, they've grown up with diet culture, and then they have to go through that period of unlearning and then relearning how to be an intuitive eater. But as many of us intuitive eating experts say, you are born natural intuitive eaters. So if you never get corrupted by diet culture, how do you actually encourage your kids to grow up with a healthy relationship with food and become intuitive eaters? But if you just look into the book Intuitive Eating, it is written for an adult population. So we can't just, as literally the guest today put it, copy and paste all of the approaches for intuitive eating that is made for adults into how you are raising your kids. So what do you do? Today, I brought on nutrition expert, nutrition PhD, and dietitian and mother of three, Dr. Taylor Arnold. We are going to be answering all of those questions that I'm sure many of you have had if you have children yourself and you want to prevent yourself from passing on diet culture to them and raise them to be intuitive eaters. You've maybe had the question before, well, since intuitive eating includes this unconditional permission to eat, how does that not lead to a kid eating everything and anything, eating whatever they want, whenever they want? And what do you do if by breaking free from the restrictive mindset, you find your kids solely gravitating towards foods like ice cream? How do you teach kids about nutrition without ending up demonizing food like diet culture would? Are there appropriate times to set boundaries with food without it being considered quote unquote restrictive? Like possibly when a kid wants candy at bedtime. How do you navigate that situation without feeling like you're feeding into diet culture? Plus, I love that we get into addressing how to actually check your intention behind your boundary setting with your children when it comes to food-related behaviors. And so much more. We talk about so much when it comes to growing intuitive eaters because that is Dr. Taylor's specialty. Dr. Taylor, like I said, is a nutrition PhD and dietitian whose passion is helping kids raise intuitive eaters, which helps kids try new foods. She helps parents to learn how to talk to their kids about food and even to start feeding their baby. Her goal is to help parents to not pass on disordered eating behaviors to their kids. Through her YouTube channel, she actually provides free courses on starting solids, picky eating, feeding kids with ADHD, and more. She has a ton of amazing YouTube videos because she wants to make nutrition education for parents more accessible. You can find her at Growing Intuitive Eaters on YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok, sharing practical advice, evidence-based nutrition, and reviewing fun feeding products. I am a dietitian. I am an intuitive eating professional, but I am not a parent. So in order to have this conversation, I wanted to bring on somebody who is an expert in all of those things, but also an expert in being a parent because she is one. So let's just jump straight into this interview with Dr. Taylor Arnold. Just to kick off the episode, I would love if you could tell our listeners a bit about what it is that you do and how you got started in this work.
Oh my gosh, well, that's kind of a long story, but I'll keep it short. So I help parents help their kids have healthy relationships with food. I talk to them about how to talk to their kids about food, picky eating, starting solids with their babies, and just growing intuitive eaters, growing kids into being intuitive eaters. How I got here, I got my PhD. I loved nutrition and I wanted to research until I realized that I was more interested in like the immediate helping of someone in the clinical setting. And so I became a clinical RD and I really loved it until I missed the teaching piece that I got in my PhD. And so then I became a professor and I really loved it until I missed the clinical piece. And so I was like trying to figure out how can I have the helping people? How can I have the teaching piece? How can I keep the pediatrics piece? And then I had my own babies and how can I manage all of this with spending more time with my kids? And I just really, in all of that, fell in love with the like science communication and educating people online. I feel like that was a great way for me to reach a bunch of people with this important information because every parent feeds their kids. We all have to feed our kids, whether it's through a bottle, with a tube, with food. Like we all have to feed our kids somehow. And I think parents are just craving evidence-based information on how to do that and how to raise their kids to be intuitive eaters. And so that's what I started talking about. And turns out people really wanted to listen and really wanted to hear it. And so I've built this amazing community of like-minded parents who just love evidence-based information about raising intuitive eaters. And I'm thrilled that I kind of, in this whole roundabout way, found myself here.
Yeah. And I know that so many people need your message, especially because we're in this new era of so much being shared so quickly. We're receiving so much information online so quickly. And I think it's great to have a credible, reliable source you know you can go to get information. And so I love that you're helping to voice some of that, especially debunking a lot of misinformation about those types of things.
And especially in the nutrition space and then the parenting space, there's just so much. It's like even more oversaturated in information. And so I'm at this intersection of these two fields that are really hot topics on social media. There's tons of information. There's tons of debunking that needs to happen. So I love it. I love being here.
Yeah. I love it. Well, I know that's something that, I mean, I'm not a parent myself, but from what I observe, at least, there's this pressure when it comes to feeding your children and trying to do the best that you can. Yet this intuitive eating approach is very flexible. And so what was it that you kind of first discovered intuitive eating and how it could be applicable to feeding kids?
That's a great question. So I, like many dietitians, was raised as a dietitian in school and we learned about diet culture-y things. It was an emphasis on weight, and you know, I had I didn't own one, but I was trained with the model of fat. You know, that like blob of fat that.
Oh yeah, so I do remember that.
Yep, I had that in my clinical training as an RD, and very minimal eating behaviors, almost no eating disorder training. That was like a one graduate level course and it was optional. So I was trained as like a classically trained, like diet culture centric RD. But then, you know, in peds, getting into peds, I noticed a lot of these families were really struggling with the same thing. And they're struggling with selective eating or picky eating. They're struggling with diet culture. They're struggling with weight loss messaging. And it was really frustrating. I felt like all of these families were missing this crucial educational component in terms of learning about how to feed their kids. And, you know, I always said, it's funny, when I was in grad school, I said, I don't want to be in eating behaviors. I want to be like biochemical nutrition. I was my research was all on vitamin B12, and I loved the metabolism maps, and I would, you know, draw those out. And oh, I loved that. And I was like, oh, eating behaviors is not my thing. Now it is majorly my thing. I love it. And I just, it's just the missing piece that families need. And I read the book Intuitive Eating. And I think like many people who are in the field of intuitive eating, it was kind of like a catalyst for me to realize that there's another way to look at nutrition. And then as a scientist, realizing that it's a really evidence-based approach too. It's not just some book that somebody just thought up and got a following. There's a lot of science behind intuitive eating and supporting healthy relationships with food for kids and reducing disordered eating risk and responsive feeding and low pressure feeding. And these are all very evidence-based approaches. And so, of course, I fell even more in love with this approach because I am a science nerd and I love that aspect of it. And so, I mean, that's kind of where I fell into this little niche, is realizing that parents were missing that piece of information, that crucial piece of information in feeding their kids. And I wanted to give that to them. So
I love how passionate you are about this. And for those that don't know Taylor, it's not like you read one research study and go, oh, that's evidence-based. You dissect like 6 at a time, 7, 8, 9, 10, in order to just, you know, be able to share one point or help clear up, you know, information on one point. And so yeah, I like that you look at all sorts of different angles with this and make sure that you're picking the most credible sort of research studies and being able to communicate when there's flaws in other areas. So obviously, educating and parents learning about this stuff is one thing, but when it goes to applying it, I know I hear a lot of parents who are worried about giving their kids this unconditional permission to eat, as that is part of intuitive eating and breaking free from those strict food rules. And so you probably get this question all the time, but if you let your kids decide what to eat and eat what they want, how do you not see them just eating candy or chips or kind of whatever are more of those enticing foods that we think of when we think of quote unquote unhealthy foods? How does that not happen?
Okay, so this is such a good question. So I think a lot of people who are in the intuitive eating space like yourself, or who have gone through the intuitive eating journey and then have kids, look at how can we apply intuitive eating to kids? And we take these principles and think, how can we use them in our kids? But the book Intuitive Eating is generally written for an adult population. And so we can't just copy paste all of the approaches for intuitive eating for adults into kids, because kids are not mini adults. Their brains are wired differently. Their brains are still developing. And so while unconditional permission to eat is a part of intuitive eating for an adult, that looks different because, for example, the gentle nutrition piece of intuitive eating, we often have to help our kids implement that. Our kids have boundaries. They cannot just go to the store and buy whatever they want at the grocery store because they don't have a car, they don't have money, they don't have the capacity to do that in a safe way. Kids don't have as much forethought or understanding of consequences of our choices as adults do. They're more concrete than abstract thinkers, so it's hard for them to conceptualize, you know, how something might make us feel in the future or what something does inside of our bodies. It's hard for them to like conceptualize a relationship with food and the importance of nurturing that. And so we have to help them do those things. So what unconditional permission to eat looks like in kids is a parent setting responsive, respectful boundaries with them and providing them a variety of options to eat. And then within that boundary that we set, giving them unconditional permission to eat within that boundary. So that might look like a parent of a toddler choosing what is served for dinner, serving multiple different foods. So like, let's say we're giving them, you know, chicken, rice, broccoli, and ice cream. And now we're giving our child unconditional permission to eat within what I have served and as much as they would like, as much as their body is telling them that they want and or need within those boundaries. And as they get older, we help them, we involve them more in the choice, the decision-making process. You know, we talk to them about how food makes our bodies feel. And as they get even older, we talk to them about diet culture and have these tough conversations with them. And we get them to a place where they can have that boundaryless access to food and then make those decisions for themselves, keeping in mind the gentle nutrition piece, keeping in mind, you know, healthy relationships with food, keeping in mind that food is not just fuel, it's enjoyment, it's culture, it's connection, but it's also taking care of our bodies. So yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. And I think oftentimes people might think, well, intuitive eating doesn't work for kids because you can't just like let them eat whatever they want, whenever they want. And to that, I agree. We shouldn't just let kids like have full access to the pantry of whatever they want all the time. We need to guide them and give them boundaries, just like we do in every other aspect. We do that in their education, in their sleep, with their medical needs, with their clothes. Like, we help them and give them boundaries. And so the same goes for food.
And I like the way you describe that, because even on the adult end, there's a lot of misconceptions about intuitive eating being strictly just based on like, what do you desire? What do you feel like will taste good? And just like eat that on impulse. But it really is this dynamic interplay. I think it's literally a direct quote of, it's a dynamic interplay between instinct, emotion, and rational thought. And of course, a toddler or a child's not going to have as much of that development of the rational thought or ability to reflect. And like you said, you know, understanding the cause and effect of consequences. So I love the way you explained it and kind of gave validation to that feeling of, yeah, if it was just that automatic assumption of eat what you want, whenever you want, that may not be the best case for kids. So you mentioned, though, okay, a parent might be planning a meal for their toddler, and you said like chicken, broccoli, whatever, and ice cream. And so is the approach of creating a healthy relationship with food, about allowing those sort of sweets and tasty foods alongside the meal. What if the child is eating and then is kind of solely gravitating towards the ice cream?
Okay, that's a good point. And first of all, I want to say ice cream is probably a bad example because I do recommend serving sweets with the food, but ice cream melts. So like, if you want to save ice cream to the end of dinner because it melts, that's totally fine. I get that. I do that too because I like will have a melty mess of chicken covered in melted chocolate ice cream on their plate, and that's just a disaster. So, but yes, let's switch the example to like cookies, Oreos. Oreos are my thing. I love Oreos. So let's say you serve chicken, broccoli, rice, and Oreos for dinner for your toddler, and your toddler's like only choosing the Oreos. Internally, you might be having a freak out. Like, oh my gosh. First of all, you're thinking about the sugar. Second of all, you're thinking about that TikTok video that you saw about how processed foods are bad for your kid. You know, you're thinking about maybe what the pediatrician said, and all these thoughts are like rumbling around inside your head. I understand that situation fully and completely. I understand how it feels to feel like stressed and trying to keep a straight face and wanting your kid to have a good relationship with food, but worrying about what they're eating. I get that. But I think it's really important to give our kids autonomy around what we have chosen to serve, because they can never learn to develop that listening to their body if they're never given the opportunity. And I think, you know, giving our kids that autonomy is beneficial in the long run, because they're going to learn how things make them feel. And let's say you have your kid who's like only choosing Oreos. Well, there's other things that we can do to make the other foods more exciting. It's not just about like putting it on the plate and just leaving it and letting them go. Like one of my kids, for example, is a very selective eater, and he requires a lot of support at mealtime. So whether that be making sure his sensory needs are met, you know, we do a lot of food play at mealtime. So like we'll pretend to be different animals and think like, I'm a tiger. What would I eat on my plate? You know, okay, well, tigers don't really eat rice, but maybe they would eat the chicken, and I'm a bunny. Now what kind of food would I eat? Or we would give them like food picks and toys to help make him feel more comfortable at exploring the food, but still low pressure. Like we're not requiring him to eat anything. And so these strategies are making the other foods more exciting, so it's not about suppressing their desire to eat the Oreo. It's about increasing or it's supporting them in exploring other foods too, because those foods can be kind of intimidating. I mean, you know, an Oreo is the same every time you eat it. It's sweet, so it's naturally appealing to kids. And like chicken, sometimes it has different spices. Maybe it might not look appealing. Maybe the texture might be difficult. So like kids might need some more support in exploring that. Maybe we'll get them involved in cooking. So the other night we made pasta. My husband, he's the cook in our family, made pasta. And my son helped him cook. And he immediately sat down and started eating. Whereas sometimes he'll be like really hesitant and he'll wait almost till the end of dinner before he'll start to eat something. And so the fact that he was exposed to that in the cooking process made him feel more comfortable around the food and willing to try it. And he actually liked it. So there's lots of strategies that we can do. And if your kid sits down and eats only the Oreos, sometimes that will happen. Sometimes your kid will have a dinner of Oreos. That happens to my kids too. And you know, it is what it is. In my opinion, it's a small price to pay for the healthy relationship with food that they're developing. And I don't even like the way I said that. You know, it's not a price. It's just an experience. They're experiencing that food. And if you're concerned about sugar intake, like I think that's like the elephant. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, I'm rambling.
I was just going to say, it's kind of like when you said, you know, you don't want to say it's a price to pay, it's kind of like it's just one moment or a few moments in the grand scheme of things.
Exactly. And, you know, I think how many meals do we have in a year? Like 1,100 or something like that. It's a very big number. Yeah. And so, you know, if your kid has Oreos for dinner a couple times, in the grand scheme of things, it's very small. And the autonomy that you've given them is a really powerful thing. And food battles suck at the table. And so when we take away that autonomy, food battles are going to increase. And so, you know, there's a lot of negative to taking away that autonomy for kids. So I could chat about this.
Yeah, and I think that's a good segue into the question around save your dessert for later, or like eat your veggies first, because of course parents want their child to be nourished and to be nourished with a variety of nutrient-dense foods. And so you're saying your kid might gravitate more towards the Oreos. So in increasing their intake of these fruits, vegetables, whatever other foods, what might be the, I don't know, what's your opinion on the whole save the dessert for later? So it's still there, but it's not a part of the meal where they could have it technically first.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like saving the dessert for later. I think, actually, this is one of my recent YouTube videos. We talked about, like, are we going to get our kids to eat more vegetables by saving the dessert to the end? Or are we going to get our kids to eat more vegetables or whatever healthy food you want to insert here? If we require they eat something, quote unquote, healthy before we give them the vegetables. And no, we're not. We are going to either not increase their vegetable intake or we're going to decrease their vegetable intake because we're going to make it seem less appealing, like a chore, like something that has to be done to earn the actual exciting thing. So while it may feel like in the moment, you know, one meal, you get them to eat a couple more bites of broccoli before you give the Oreo, in the grand scheme of things, if we decrease their interest in vegetables, or we make vegetables feel like a chore, we're going to overall be decreasing their vegetable intake. And the fact of the matter is there are so many vegetables in this world, and there are so many ways to prepare them. There are so many ways to prepare them with cheese or with garlic or with, you know, delicious olive oil, or we can like roast them with like cinnamon and sugar, like carrots. And like, there are amazing ways to make vegetables delicious. And it's a shame if we make kids feel like vegetables are like this boring, gross, like non-exciting thing. Like many children's books, like I have a children's book, you know, that Matthew McConaughey's wife wrote. I bought it because it was popular on the Today Show. And the kid on the front is making a face and talking about how broccoli is so gross. And I hate how we're sending that message to kids, because vegetables can be an incredible part of their diet and so yummy and delicious. And why don't we want to help kids enjoy them and experience all the fun flavors and, you know, cooking them or whatever? And this goes for fruits and any other type of food too. Why don't we want to help our kids do that instead of making them feel like it's a chore? And so that's what that's my preferred approach.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that and even giving the examples of like, if you want to get them to eat the broccoli, try different seasonings, try different sauces. It's still nutritious if you put cheese on top or cook it in butter. Like there's 100%. All sorts of different ways you can explore. Yeah. And I do that for myself as well. I'm like, dip my carrots in ranch. I'm still getting those nutrients.
Oh, yes. Because the vitamin A is fat soluble, you're arguably absorbing even more nutrients from some of the vegetables.
There we go. It's a win and a win. I love it. So going off of that, when it comes to even just talking about these quote unquote healthier foods versus these quote unquote unhealthier foods, I don't like labeling foods as that because it's so diverse. And I know you know that and also agree with that. Yeah. But when talking about them, how do you do it in a way that doesn't end up creating such a dichotomous parallel between the two where it's like, oh, these are obviously better or these are obviously worse? What's your take on being like, oh, what's the difference between broccoli versus the Oreo cookie?
So my take is being accurate and age appropriate. I think that those two things are very important. And I also don't love labels, like abstract labels, like healthy, unhealthy, or like sometimes or always food. I don't love that. Like, for example, that's one thing that Sesame Street does is they call cookies sometimes food, but that's very abstract, right? Like the younger kids are, the more abstract thinkers they are. Well, what does sometimes mean? Does that mean once a day, once a week, once every 5 minutes? Sometimes can mean lots of different things. And that's confusing. And so now we've added a layer of confusion instead of an accurate thing. So when we're talking about cookies and broccoli, we can keep it age appropriate. And if our kids ask what they do in our bodies, we can say something like, well, broccoli has lots of fiber and fiber helps you poop. And sometimes it makes you toot. And, you know, broccoli also has vitamin K, and that helps your body make a scab when you get a cut. How cool is that? You know, that's how I would explain broccoli. And like, cookies, I would say like, okay, well, cookies, they have sugar in it. And sugar helps your brain run, just like gas in our car helps our brain run. And cookies also taste really good. And sometimes we have cookies when we're celebrating a birthday party. So it helps us have fun with each other and connect with each other. And that's how I would explain it. I think there's this like desire for parents to somehow explain to our kids that cookies are worse for your body than broccoli. And while there is absolutely a large body of research that talks about the negative effects of large amounts of sugar, I don't think that that's like the first thing we need to be introducing to a three-year-old. Keep it simple and accurate. We need to talk to our kids about food before we talk to them about nutrients. And if they're curious and they're asking about nutrients, sure, we can bring it up. But like, I don't need to have a discussion about vitamin C with my three-year-old. Like, I would ask him if he asks, but like, we just need to keep it age appropriate. And there's a time to bring in the science of nutrition, which is incredibly nuanced, which is why I don't think it's appropriate to be discussing all of these complex scientific topics with a three-year-old or even a five-year-old. But, you know, I think that we need to be careful with introducing these complex ideas that require a lot of nuance to understand to our young kids. But I do think it's possible to explain to them things like what foods do in our body in an age-appropriate way without diet culture. I think that's absolutely possible.
A lot of what you said there, I think, really highlights the fact of like, if obviously in theory with good intentions, we're trying to get our kids to eat more vegetables, but we're trying to get them to eat less cookies, we think that by trying to create this sort of limitation with the cookies would actually decrease their consumption of it, or making it a quote unquote sometimes food would overall decrease the consumption of it. But what we know, both from what I've had experiences with, from what I've seen with my clients, and from tons of research, we know that the more scarcity there is, the more likely people are to overconsume, including kids, right? We see things about why do kids hoard food, hide wrappers under their pillowcase, store things under their bed, right? And a lot of that, the root of it is the scarcity of like, oh, I don't get to have this very often and I want to have this more often. And so I have to hoard it or eat it all while I can. And so it is about creating a lot more of that neutrality, like all foods are foods and they all have different purposes and they can all be welcome.
Wait, can I add one more thing? So I think when we're talking to our kids about food, it's important to check our intentions. Like, are we explaining this nutrient or this food to our kids because they asked and they're curious? Or are we explaining it to them because we're trying to get them to eat a certain way? And I'm always an advocate for like, if your kid asks why we eat broccoli and what it does in our tummies, explain it to them, but keep it accurate. But are you telling them about broccoli and the sugar in cookies because you're trying to get them to eat less cookies and more broccoli? Then I think we need to take a step back from that conversation and check the intention, because that can be problematic when we're talking to our kids about the food that they're eating. So
Yeah. Well, and I think that kind of goes into what I was going to ask next, which is early in this episode, you mentioned there are places for boundaries. And so I think if we're checking our intention of like, okay, it's bedtime and I don't actually want my kid to eat the cookie right now, but I don't want my intention to be not having them eat the cookie, what do I do, right? Where do those boundaries come into play and how?
So, bedtimes, you just hit on a major pain point for a lot of parents, is the bedtime snack requests. So again, what you're saying is it's important to check the intention. Are we saying no to the cookie because we feel like our kid is eating too much sugar? Are we saying no to the cookie for other reasons? So when it comes to bedtime snacks, I recommend offering something simple and boring. And I recommend being consistent when you can. I know schedules vary with like, you know, after school activities and whatnot, but offering something simple. So like a bedtime snack might look like a cheese stick and a clementine, a glass of milk, some oatmeal, some cereal with whole milk. Let's see, like banana and peanut butter. That's what I just ate. So something simple like that. So when your kid is asking for a cookie at bedtime and you say no, are you perpetuating diet culture? I think is a fear of a lot of parents who are trying to implement intuitive eating. And to that, I would say no. It's okay to say no to sweets. It's okay to say no to like certain foods. And that doesn't mean that you're like not letting your kid eat intuitively. You are just holding boundaries. So in our house, here are the options for bedtime snacks. We can absolutely have cookies. You could say something like, oh my gosh, a cookie sounds so good. Let's have one with our breakfast tomorrow. But right now, here are your choices for bedtime snacks, and then leave it at that. That's kind of how I would approach that. Usually when they ask for something like a sweets, my approach is to try to say yes. If I can't say yes in that moment, I will say, that's a great idea. We can have ice cream right now, and we don't have any in our freezer, but I will add some to our list and I'll get some on Sunday when we pick up groceries. Or like, oh, you know what? We can't have ice cream right now because it's not on the menu. Dad's already planned our dinner, but how about we have some with lunch tomorrow? That's kind of my general approach when I say no to something like sweets or like a quote unquote snacky type food.
It's creating that trust that, oh, it's not going anywhere. So it is just, it's normal. And that's honestly similar to what I talk with my adult clients about is like, how can we create this mindset around like, I can have it today, tomorrow, the next day. And so if I can't have it right in this moment, it doesn't feel like it's scarce because I know it's not actually going anywhere. But I love the language that you use to be like, oh yeah, that sounds really good. We can absolutely have some tomorrow with breakfast, but you know, here are my options. Here are the options right now just to kind of create this
and it's balance. Important to follow through that's with really that. Good. So,
yeah. To wrap up, I know that there's probably parents listening who have already, you know, they've already started with their kids. Like they've already, they maybe have middle schoolers, elementary schoolers, and up to this point, they didn't know about intuitive eating and helping to grow intuitive eaters. And they're sitting here thinking, I've already started implementing some rules, but now I'm realizing those maybe aren't supportive of growing an intuitive eater. So what would you tell those parents who are listening?
Ooh, this is a good question. So first of all, I am not going to lie to you to say that it is going to be easy because it's probably not going to be easy, especially if you struggle with your own disordered eating or eating disorder past or even present. It's going to be hard. It's hard to undo things, and working on this for the first time with a teen is definitely harder than working on it with a toddler. But it is not impossible, and it is 100% within your, you know, ability to do that and or identify when is the time that you would need to seek the help of a professional. So the first thing that I would do, especially if your kid is older, like tween or teen age, is talk to them. Be like, hey, you know, I was learning a little bit about nutrition, I was reading or watching a video or whatever, and it made me realize that I want to switch the way we're doing things in our house. So I have realized that I haven't been trusting your body, and I really want to do that. I know that your body can understand, you can understand your hunger signals, and I know, you know, X, Y, and Z, whatever you want to say to your kids. And so here's what that's going to look like. I'm going to decide what's for meals for younger kids or for older kids. Like I'm going to decide sometimes, you're going to decide sometimes, we'll decide together. You have to, you know, figure out what's most appropriate for your family and the ages of your kids. And then when we serve that, I'm going to let you choose what to eat. You know, I'm not going to make you eat your dessert after your vegetables. I'm not going to, you know, make you eat so many different types. And I think it's really important to be communicative and lay it out for your kids about what's going to change. And then know that there's going to be a period of testing. Kids love to test, especially with food. And so they're going to be like, is mom for real? Is dad for real? Are they really going to let me eat as much ice cream as I want? Because I'm going to test it. I'm not just going to ask them. I am going to test them, and I'm going to test their resolve in watching me eat 4 bowls of ice cream. So just mentally prepare yourself. If you're working with a dietitian or a therapist, like let them know ahead of time that this is happening so that they can support you. But just be prepared because there's going to be this period, but that period will end. That period will end. And if you feel like your child is not able to listen to their hunger cues, perhaps, you know, you need the support of a dietitian or an occupational therapist. Perhaps there's like some neurodivergence there where that's difficult and we need like some more in-depth support. And that's also a viable option too. So just like mentally prepare yourself, but it's the long game and it's totally worth it because these skills are going to be like carried through their whole life. And as a parent, you have so much amazing potential to support your kids in this, and it's never too late. It's never too late. Even if you have a 17-year-old, an 18-year-old, it's never too late. And then if you have adult kids, it's never too late to support them in raising their kids to be intuitive eaters. So you can always make a positive change for the better with this.
Yeah. And if anybody listening wants to know why making this change could have benefits for your family, definitely go check out all of Taylor's content because you educate frequently on the research around it in terms of how it can be supportive, how it can decrease eating disorder risk, and all sorts of other wonderful things around intuitive eating. So on that note, if anyone listening is wanting to know more about growing intuitive eaters and helping their families, what should they do? Where can they find your resources?
Ooh, okay. Well, first, I have lots for you. I am on Instagram at growing.intuitive.eaters. I'm on TikTok at dr.taylorarnold. And then I'm on YouTube at Growing Intuitive Eaters. So I highly recommend my YouTube page because it's searchable. So you can like search questions that you have. My Instagram content is all being uploaded to my YouTube page as well. And you know, that's a good place to ask questions in the comments. And then if you ever want to like DM me with more complicated questions, although I can't provide medical like nutrition therapy support or individualized responses to medical issues, you can always respond to, or message me on my Patreon. I have a 7-day free trial, so you can check out all the resources I have there. My YouTube has free courses. All of my courses are 100% free, no catch or anything like that. Because again, like I said at the beginning, every parent has to feed their kids. And I think every parent deserves accurate, evidence-based information on how to do that. So you can find me many places. I hope you join. It's a wonderful community and I love talking about it. So hopefully you're ready to hear me talk about it more.
I love that all of your resources, all of your courses are free because that's just unheard of in a lot of industries, but you know, your passion for this and your mission behind it obviously shows, and you put so much great content out there. So I'm so glad I could have you on today to share with my audience.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you guys so much for watching. Dr. Taylor is just amazing in all of the ways in which she provides accessible, easy to understand information out there for parents who are hoping to raise intuitive eaters. A big part about raising intuitive eaters is obviously having a healthy relationship with food for yourself. I want to remind you, if you are currently struggling with your relationship with food, my signature group coaching program Behind the Binge Academy is currently open for enrollment. We have two cohorts enrolling right now at various different time options, so that way we can hit different time zones. So if you are ready to stop the restrict binge cycle, stop yo-yo dieting, learn how to make peace with food, and become a confident intuitive eater so that you can live a healthful life without guilt, stress, or obsession, Behind the Binge Academy is for you. For more information, go to academy.behindthebinge.com or click the link in the show notes and it will take you there. I hope to see you inside. This next cohort starts the second week of May and I can't wait to support you on your journey to food freedom. Again, thanks for listening, and I will catch you in the next episode. Bye, everyone.